It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Perhaps you've been following that controversy surrounding the protests of San Francisco 49ers backup quarterback Colin Kaepernick. Initially, Kaepernick sat, and then he kneeled when the Star Spangled Banner was played before preseason games. On Monday night, again, he took a knee ahead of the team's regular season opener. Now he suggested he'll need to see significant progress toward improving social justice and racial equality before he considers ending his national anthem protest. Joining me to talk about it, Keisho Scott, Associate Professor of American Studies and Sociology at Grinnell College. Also worth mentioning, perhaps in this context, the first African-American female to earn tenure at Grinnell. Keisho, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for giving me a chance to weigh in on this important subject.
It's very interesting. Kaepernick has become a figurehead for this growing movement around the league. He's admitted, as I said, he can foresee a situation when he ends his protest, but only if he feels it's had the desired effect. It's polarizing in the country, also here in Iowa. Many think you should always stand for the national anthem, regardless of your grudges against our society. What's your take on this debate?
You know, first of all, I want to say that this debate, if we are willing to look at it beyond its binary of somebody has to be wrong and somebody has to be right, we might really see this as a very powerful opportunity to see the educational moment. So I would say that really both sides of this issue, those people who feel that this is horrible and some people who say right on and support him, it's really a chance for us to look at why our democracy is racialized. And so that's sort of the view and focus that I see is really important.
Mm-hmm.
So we might ask ourselves, how did it get that way?
Right. But what do you say to so many people have that reaction, tremendous pride in our country. When they hear the national anthem, tears come to an eye, or there's a tingle down your spine of pride, of the values we hold dear, of the sacrifices that were made for this country, and this thing, this anthem, should be sacred. What do you say to those people?
What I say to those people is that they should continue and hold on to those feelings, but they should also recognize that the pathway to that democracy wasn't the same for everyone. And they also have to be tolerant and understand that other people didn't have that experience. I mean, let's go back to the historical truth. And the historical truth in this country is that there were Supreme Court decisions which defined people as less than American citizens. So their journey to practicing protest is different than those people who have used their privilege in a way to say, all of these symbols mean something to me, and they should mean the same thing to you. That can't be the case. By the way, if you look at the media chatter, one of the things that people bring up often in this, in response to Kaepernick's decision to protest, is they say, well, he's not being an American. Well, I mean, when do you get to be an American and your way of protesting is wrong and someone else's is right? See, I think that's where we don't understand and respect the racialization of what has happened. We make him bad and we make everybody else right. So let me tell you something. I love my country also. But in, 37 years ago, I was against the Vietnam War. And I remember people getting in my face saying, well, if you don't like America, get out. So why should that be the response that I have to be addressed that I don't love my country if, in fact, I'm challenging some policy or in my country? So I think that's the contradiction. And those people who, tears came to my eyes, too. And tears came to Martin Luther King's eyes, too. And tears came to women's eyes, too, when they couldn't vote. So we have to acknowledge both sides. And I think the binary thinking is the thing that gets us sort of jammed. Somebody's got to be wrong and somebody has to be right.
Representative Steve King of Iowa's 4th District was caught in that media chatter. He was interviewed about this. He went so far as drawing a connection between the silent protest of the national anthem and Colin Kaepernick being sympathetic to ISIS. Comment on that.
Wow. Barack Obama, our president, said that democracy's hard. And democracy's hard because I have to be as tolerant as his response as he has to be to other people who protest in a different way. I think vilifying people because they're practicing democracy is like saying there's only one form of democracy. And I think there are many pathways to the democratic expression. And so, you know, it would be inappropriate for me to sort of vilify him. And I'm not going to do that right now. I'm going to not do that with anyone that I disagree with. But that action to do that, to vilify people when they don't agree with you, that's really counter-democratic in my mind.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if there is any historical parallels when we talk about this national anthem protest, some seeing it as not respecting our nation when you don't stand for the national anthem at the beginning of a sports event.
I have an example. I have one.
Go ahead.
I have one. Here's a parallel. Millions of African Americans sing the Black National Anthem. Have we gotten up and protested against all those people that don't stand up and understand that?
Mm-hmm.
No, because we understand there is an intersection of the love for one's country and the love for one's pride in their ethnic group or their racial group or their religious group or their linguistic group. And so part of the challenge in looking at how American democracy has been racialized in terms of people being excluded and then people being included is that we have to realize that these symbols of what make us Americans have the right to be experienced different by different people and at different times. Every person, every generation in my family has been in the military. Every person in my family are the men and now some of the women. And we feel the same amount of pride, just like people felt the same amount of pride who were in the labor movement against people who exploited people's labor in the beginning of the 20th century. So I think that, you know, when people try to polarize that someone is wrong because they don't respect the symbols of the country in the same way, this is really what's polarizing. And so people might ask themselves, how can I learn to be more tolerant? How can I understand more their position? And especially when the person's protest is not disrupting a game or disrupting an educational moment. So I think that, you know, that's the problem I have when we want to have one orthodoxy, you know, of political expression. And I think we've had a 30-year successful diversity and inclusion movement in this country. And what's interesting about that is, either we say we learned something and we're at the table talking, or we're still going to go behind our pigeonholes and point fingers at people, you know, being wrong. There are wrongs in America, but there are quite a few many more rights that we're organized and united around. And I say let's focus on that.
Mm-hmm. I wondered if you saw how South Park dealt with this, the cartoon show that often plays off of contemporary themes. In this little scene I wanted to play, just to describe it, we'll hear an announcer in a football stadium. Of course, it's cartoon land.
Right.
And Colin Kaepernick is out there ready for the national anthem when the announcer says, you don't just stand. You can do a lot of things to respect the national anthem. Let's listen.
For our national anthem, we now ask you all in solidarity to please rise or sit or take a knee in order to honor America.
Wait a minute. Wait. Oh, and J.J. Abrams has absolutely shattered expectations, Mike.
Now, whether people are standing, sitting, or kneeling, they are all honoring America. J.J. Abrams is a wizard, Tom, a wizard.
More people sitting now as Abrams has made it irrelevant. Who saw this coming?
And there's the rest of the anthem, all the parts we remembered and loved. J.J. Abrams has fixed America.
Okay, besides being funny, Keisho, doesn't that hit the nail on the head? Is who says kneeling is not respecting the national anthem?
That's right. And I first of all, I love that show, and I love the fact that they attempt to make us laugh at something that for many people have different, uncomfortable feelings about. But here's the thing. I think they hit it on the nail because they say expression is open to all of us. And, you know, when you start looking at the people who are behind Kaepernick, you see a whole diversity of people. I think you see the Marines Corps, you see college students, you see elected officials, but you also see people on the other side who are in agreement with we should be respectful in a certain way. The point is that all of them fit. And as many Americans that we have in this country, we have as many expressions of democracy. And I think that's what's important. Isn't that really what we want to project to the rest of the world? I mean, America has played a crucial role in spreading principles of democracy throughout the world, sometime in good ways, sometime in not good ways. But the fact of the matter is, if we're going to be a beacon of this expression throughout the world, then we better demonstrate it in our own country. So I think South Park hit it on the nail by doing that. I think it's kind of funny.
Cashel Scott, thank you again for your thoughts. Associate Professor of American Studies and Sociology at Grinnell College. Look forward to talking to you again. Cashel Scott, thanks.
Thank you so much. Take care.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Quick conversations to end the week about some of the news that we didn't get to otherwise during our work week. Coming up in just a moment, Iowa City prepares for the World Cup of Cyclocross. But first, St. Louis-based Monsanto, a world agribusiness leader, has agreed to be acquired by the German company Bayer. Bayer will pay $57 billion. It's a deal that's been in the works since last spring. Two other mergers underway in the industry, with Dow is set to combine with DuPont, and also ChemChina planning to buy the Swiss company Syngenta. Amy Mayer is joining us, Iowa Public Radio reporter and reporter for Harvest Public Media. Amy Mayer, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
And so tell us, this latest acquisition here is evidently going through. What does it mean for U.S. farmers at this time? Great yields out there. We're hearing we should have bumper crops, but low commodity prices.
Exactly, and I think that's on the minds both of the farmers and of these companies that are producing the seeds that they grow. It's a little early to say with any kind of precision what this is going to mean for farmers, but what most economists who are watching the situation seem to believe is that less competition will ultimately lead to higher prices. That's the downside. On the plus side, more money available for research and development, which many people think these mergers will result in, means bringing new things to farmers to combat the challenges that they have, such as herbicide-resistant weeds, for example.
Mm-hmm. So this is just like we as consumers, when we have fewer companies controlling the market, we have fewer choices, and that's why they think the prices might go up?
Right. I mean, in terms of a farmer actually looking at a list of seeds and selecting which one he wants to use, he will probably continue to have a really long list of those seeds. But who is ultimately manufacturing or responsible for the development of those seeds, that will be fewer players up at the top there.
Mm-hmm. You spoke with someone at Monsanto about this, I believe.
That's right. Rob Fraley was here in Boone for the Farm Progress Show a couple weeks ago. He is the chief technology officer at Monsanto. I asked him about this, and you know, I asked him about the mergers. He wasn't speaking specifically to this deal between Bayer and Monsanto because that was still under wraps at the time. But he was talking generally about what it means to have the companies merged into a smaller group of bigger companies. Here's what he said.
When I talked to a lot of farmers, they tend to believe they're better served by a lot of small players competing against each other. The problem is it's going to take bigger companies with more R&D capability to try to, you know, be able to invent the products for the future. And so I think the changes we're seeing in this industry are not only healthy, but they're the kind of changes that are going to be needed in order to enable the kind of investments to bring the kind of products that farmers are going to need and want in the future.
Okay, so talk a little bit, Amy, about how this is in the context of the other mergers underway. Dow combining with DuPont, ChemChina planning to be with Syngenta. Is this coincidental, or is this part of what the man was talking about?
It's certainly not coincidental. I think the Dow-DuPont merger was the first of these three to come to light, and it's not surprising that then some of the other major players quickly wanted to sort of pair up, so to speak. The companies are looking at those lower commodity prices and are concerned that farmers are going to start wanting to buy the cheaper seeds rather than the premium seeds that they were willing to shell out for and that are the big money makers for the companies. And I think also for Iowa in particular, it's interesting to look at Dow DuPont because, of course, DuPont acquired Iowa-based Pioneer back in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
So there are certainly employees there who have been through this type of thing once before. It's also worth noting Dow DuPont is to American companies, whereas with ChemChina and Syngenta, you have the Chinese company, state-owned company, with a European company, and now with Bayer Monsanto, that will be an EU North American merging. So they have some different nuances.
Amy Mayer, reporter for Iowa Public Radio and Harvest Public Media. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you.
Iowa City is preparing to host an international sporting event that will be televised live around the world, the UCI World Cup of Cyclocross. It's an event to be held at the Johnson County Fairgrounds, September 22nd through the 25th. Joining me to talk about it, John Meehan is race director and promoter of the Iowa leg of the Cyclocross World Cup. John, welcome to our program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So for those who don't know, remind us, what is cyclocross?
Cyclocross is a sport on a bicycle that is kind of a combination of running, cycling, hurdling, and it's an amazing sport of a kind of a Spartan race on a bike. When people watch the Tour de France, they see them race from point to point. It's not like that at all. This is around a closed-loop course where there's obstacles and barriers. You have to get off your bike, climb over those barriers, holding your bike, get back on the bike, through the sand, the mud, the big hills. It's really a cool event. Each race course is only about 2 miles around, so about 3 kilometers, and you have to do lap after lap after lap. So it's a great spectator sport. They don't just pass you once. They're passing you to your left, to your right, all over the place, and it's really high energy, tons of fun to watch. It's a great thing for the spectators.
How in the world did Iowa City, Johnson County Fairgrounds, get selected to be the venue for this prestigious international event?
Well, we've been putting on the Jingle Cross for 13 years now here in Iowa City, and it has grown to be the largest cyclocross event in North America. And basically, we were bringing in riders from all over the nation who are just amateurs coming in. At the end of the day, we would have a pro bike race. And the way to think of the professional bike race is think of it also as like in Major League Baseball. You have AAA baseball, you have major leagues, and then you have the World Series. So with that AAA baseball, that's what our C2 race is called, and we're going to have one of those on Friday night. Then on Sunday, we're going to have a C1 race, and that's like having, and that's at the end of all the amateur racing. That's basically like having a Major League Baseball game where all the really good riders are going to be riding in it. But the World Cup is a different planet. It is the best riders from around the world. Most of these people were actually racing in the Rio Games for mountain biking very recently. Mm-hmm. So they're all flying in from all over the world to race this race. This is the second stop on the World Cup series. There are 9 races around the world. 7 are in Europe. And for the first time ever, there's 2 in North America. There's only been 1 in North America in the entire 100-year history of the World Cup and of cyclocross. And now here in the United States, we have 2 this year with 1 in Iowa City.
Mm-hmm.
We're in game 2 of the World Series.
Tell us about some of the names. People might not recognize them. And some of the names, the top riders in cyclocross and what countries they come from.
Sure, yeah. On the women's side, is going to be incredibly stacked. These are really, really good riders. Last year, one of our winners of our C2 race is Caroline Mani from France. She's is the French national champion. She's going to be back racing. And after she got won one of our races last year, she went back to France, won the national championships of France, and got 2nd in the world championships. Then we have Katarina Nash, who also won one of our events last year. She's from the Czech Republic. She's won our events many, many times. And she's coming in just getting 5th at the Olympic Games on the mountain biking just very recently. And Katie Compton from the United States, one of the top racers in the world. She's won the U.S. national championships for 12 years running. She'll be racing as well. So the women's field is incredible. And then we have Consant from France, from Belgium. She'll be coming as well, and she's a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
On the men's side, even more exciting. Wout van Aert. He's from Belgium. He is the world champion, and he will be racing here. This guy is power, nothing but sheer power.
These are people with legs like tree trunks.
Oh my gosh, they are incredible athletes. And you look at this hill that they're going to ride up, and I mean, it's hard for us to even walk up it, and they'll be riding straight up it like it's nothing. And then they'll be going over the hurdles, over the barriers, through the sand, all these things, and it's a great spectator sport. Fun to watch.
You mentioned Jingle Cross, and I've been to it a couple times. It is great fun to watch it, but it is also closer to Christmas, closer to the holidays, and there is a masked Grinch parading around the grounds, dancing, taunting people with his grinchy humor. Is that part of this since it was moved up?
Absolutely. You know, we've always been a November-December race, and we had to move to September to be a World Cup, to stay in line with the European calendar. It was the only chance we would be able to be a World Cup. So we agreed to move up to September, and so this year, Christmas comes early.
Mm-hmm. I have to share with you my first experience watching cyclocross a couple years ago. I was encouraged to go see it, and then I went and saw it and stood with a crowd of people behind the line watching the cyclist go up Mount Crumpet just in front of me. I was amazed. But the crowd hurling what seemed to me to be quite a few insults at the riders.
Oh, yes.
So this is a part of the culture I didn't know about. And someone said, how did you like it? I said, I liked it, but I was with a bunch of people who were really not good sports.
Well, what's the funny part about that is they actually probably know that rider that was going by. That's just heckling, and that's part of the sport. It's kind of fun. You heckle your friends. And
that's part of this sport.
That's part of this sport, yeah. And because you know they're suffering out there, watching them go up these hills. It's just you're killing their legs, and you could just go out there and you ride them a little harder than what they're riding.
Okay, so when they're suffering out there, you just pile on with a verbal insult.
Absolutely. it helps keep us warm.
Right. The atmosphere is really tremendous. Music going on, dancing going on. So it's a party atmosphere.
Yeah, it's a ton of fun. We have DJs. We've got bands playing. We've got Deschutes Brewery Beer Festival. It's going to be great. And all kinds of things going on the entire weekend. Volkswagen, our title sponsor, has really come to town and helped us tremendously to really promote this race. It's going to be the biggest in North America in history.
Okay, John Meehan, tell us, how can people find out more about the Iowa leg of the Cyclocross World Cup coming up September 22nd through the 25th? How can people find out more and possibly attend?
They can go to our website, jinglecross.com, and all the information is there, including how to get parking. And the city is going to be providing parking for free, so park downtown, and they'll shuttle you right in.
Excellent. Okay, John Meehan, race director, promoter of the Iowa leg of the Cyclocross World Cup, thanks for coming in. River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Lindsay Moon, and Emily Woodbury. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. Our theme music composed by the River Monks. We also had help today from John Pemble, Jason Burns, Sean McClain, and Nick Brinks. Divine Huff gave us some help as well. I'm Ben Kiefer. Have a great weekend.